You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The ballots cast yesterday are still being tallied in a few House and Senate races, as well as in the state of Florida. But by 11:30 last night, almost all the news organizations were declaring that President Obama had been reelected. Joining me now to sift through the election results and look ahead to what they mean as we get closer to that so-called fiscal cliff we've been hearing a lot about is The New Yorker's John Cassidy. Welcome back to our show.
Thanks for having me on, Leonard.
Was this race in many ways closer than the map that we'd all we're all looking at this morning could lead us to believe?
Well, that's the great paradox about the election, of course. In terms of the popular vote, it was very close. One of the closest in U.S. history, certainly the closest since 2000. In terms of the electoral map, we've known all along that Obama had a big advantage there. And that showed up. So he won either 303 votes in the Electoral College, or if he wins Florida, which he probably will, he gets even more than that. So if you just look at the electoral map, it looked like a very comfortable victory for Obama. But because of the narrowness of the popular vote, you only need a small swing in the other direction, and Romney could have won.
And that's led Donald Trump to complain and say we need a revolution in one of his tweets. But if 2008 was an election of change, last night seemed to be of the status quo, with control of both houses of Congress remaining as they were and the president's reelection. Haven't approval ratings for Congress shown that people have been pretty dissatisfied with the status quo?
Sure. I mean, the latest approval rating I saw for Congress was 10%, which somebody said, is lower than for burglars, about the same as for journalists, I think. But, somebody said also said, we spent $6 billion and we got the status quo. That's a cynical way of looking at it. I think, it was a significant election in a lot of ways. I mean, it's the second time in a row we've elected, an African-American black man for president. That's historic. Same man, of course. It was actually the fifth, this is not often pointed out, it was the fifth time in six elections that the Democrats have won the popular vote. Countries often thought of as a center-right country. That sort of questions that. And I think on top of that, it was a repudiation of the sort of direction that the Republican Party has gone in the last few years. Given the advantages they had going into this, the state of the economy, et cetera, I think they would have expected to win. But the country has basically said, look, Mitt Romney may or may not have been an extremist, but the party is an extreme party, and we don't want them occupying the White House.
Well, there are some people who are saying that the Republican Party just chose a poor candidate, although they had a lot to choose from. And then others are saying it's because they become too extremist. But the vote was so close. Can we even look upon this as a mandate for Barack Obama?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, obviously, Obama didn't run a very positive campaign. So if you, in terms of mandate, you usually say, well, what policies has he put forward and the public have approved? And, can he go to Congress and say, well, this, I've got a mandate, let's do it. Obviously, in 2008, he had health care and he pushed that through. And he's been
barely.
He spent most of his time, on the economy, which only happened during the campaign. This time it's hard to say, what his real mandate is. I think he does have a mandate to reject the big Republican cuts in things like Medicaid. The public has rejected the Ryan budget, it seems, and all that contained. Obviously, we're going to have more rancor, more partisanship. But I think Obama does have a mandate not to give in to the Republicans on that.
I'd like to play a clip from the president's victory speech.
Tonight, you voted for action, not politics as usual. You elected us to focus on your jobs, not ours. And in the coming weeks and months, I am looking forward to reaching out and working with leaders of both parties to meet the challenges we can only solve together.
So do we have any signs that this won't be politics as usual?
Well, always after the election. I mean, I'm a bit cynical about this. Politicians, I remember Ronald Reagan even said this, how he'd reach across the aisle and work with the other party. You have to say that on the election night if you're a president. I'm sure Obama will try again. I mean, that's the sort of politician he is. He really believes in this sort of post-partisanship. And John Boehner, the Republican leader, did issue a statement last night saying it was time for us all to come together. So, at least for a few days, let's hold out a bit of hope. But I wouldn't bet my house on it.
Well, even before people went to the polls, John Boehner drew a hard line on the fiscal cliff talks, saying that he won't agree to raise taxes on America's top earners, even those making over $1 million a year. We're not raising taxes on small business people, is what he said.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, I think there will be another effort. There'll be some meetings. But when it gets down to the nitty gritty, will the Republicans be any bit more willing to compromise than they were, you know, in the summer of 2011? So far, I don't think there is any sign of that. I mean, Obama's, you know, basically got a mandate for being Obama, for being a moderate, slightly left of center president. The big question is how the Republicans react to this. Do they just stay the same GOP we've seen for the last 5-10 years, sort of just fighting anything the Democrats put across, trying to push the country further and further to the right? Or do they, you know, have some sort of internal civil war and reemerge as a more moderate party? I mean, having watched them for, you know, ever since I've been following politics in the U.S. 25 years, I'd have to say I think they'll probably stay more or less as they are. I mean,
although many of the Tea Party favorites lost their bids.
Yeah, they did. I mean, it's just hard to see who's going to be the standard bearer, who's going to, you know, stand up and lead the Republican Party back to the center. And could he or she overcome the sort of structural forces within the party, the social conservatives, the economic conservatives, the right-wing billionaires, the organizations like Grover Norquist's Americans for Tax Reform, etc., which sort of push the agenda. I think it's going to be very hard for anybody to do that.
Do you think it's going to be hard for people like the Koch brothers or people on Wall Street who put so much money into trying to defeat Barack Obama to then go to the government and say, we need a little money to help, or we need a new tariff imposed to protect our industry?
Well, I don't think they ever worry about things like that, although, you know, the stock market is down 300 points this morning. Maybe that's a bit of a...
But that's supposedly about because of what's happening in Europe.
No, although, it is. I was just making a joke.
It could be. You would have thought that usually after an election, the stock market goes up, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it must be mostly European. It's only 300 points, which sounds a lot, but in the context of a stock market at 14,000, 13,000, it's not very much. I mean, the markets had already figured in what we're going to have, which is a Democratic president and a Republican House and a deadlocked Senate. So I don't think the election had a big impact on the markets. In terms of the billionaires, I think probably a lot of them are just disappointed that, you know, they had to fly to Boston for nothing.
Well,
I mean, it's actually a, but, you know, I think, well, let's look on the positive side. You know, this was a sort of a victory. Obama, let's not be idealistic, had a lot of big money behind him as well, but he had less money than the Republicans. And to some extent, this was a victory of a small donations over big donations. And, you know, that's good for democracy, I think.
Is it ironic you call Obama slightly left of center president, and many of his opponents have called him a socialist who's trying to change the basic structure of America?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, part of that's just positioning. I think Romney tried to demonize Obama in very much the same way that Obama demonized Romney as the sort of rapacious robber baron. There may be some truth in that. But, you know, when you're in a campaign, the idea is to make the other guy look bad. But actually, you know, a lot of people in the Republican Party actually believe it. That's part of this sort of departure from reality, the, you know, cognitive dissonance that the Republican Party has. They actually think, or some of them, that Obama is a socialist.
My guest is John Cassidy, who writes for The New Yorker, often about economic matters. And the feeling all along was that the economy was the biggest issue throughout the campaign. How much were voters' decisions related to their feelings about the economy?
I mean, that's a very good question, Leonard. I mean, the exit poll showed that 60% of the people said that the economy was the biggest issue. And a very small margin, I think it was 4 points, people said that they trusted Romney more on the economy than Obama. If you just put those two figures together, you know, Mitt Romney should be getting ready to move into the White House. It didn't happen. The Democratic campaign, brilliantly, I think, over many months, managed to neutralize the economic disadvantages they faced, largely by running a negative campaign against Romney. It wasn't pretty to watch, but it did work.
And also in Ohio, which everybody agreed was the key to victory, the president seemed to be buoyed by the auto bailout and an unemployment rate that's lower than the national average. But then again, he took many states where unemployment is rather high.
No, I mean, Nevada, the economy is much higher than the national average. He swept through the Midwest. I mean, that was the two big stories of the election in terms of any, if there were any surprise, are that he seems to have won Florida, although that's not being called, and that he swept through the Midwest, the traditional bellwether of America. American politics. And I think that is partly to do with the auto bailout, as you say. I think it's also partly to do with the Republican Party's failure to attract women. Throughout the Midwest, there was a big gender gap. There's a big gender gap all across the country.
In fact, that negated the other gender gap, which was that white males voted in large numbers for Mitt Romney.
Yeah, I mean, they always have to some extent. I mean, you know, if you go back to the Reagan era, men have voted for, you know, for the Republicans and women have voted for the Democrats. But it's got bigger over the years. I mean, I think the figures in this election were that Obama won 12% among women and Romney won by 7% among men. You know, 12% is more than 7%, so you win the election if you do that.
What has the 2012 campaign and the billions that were spent on ads and the campaign said about the Citizens United decision and money in politics? Many people were concerned that it was going to buy an election. It didn't seem to work out that way.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, I think that's one of the encouraging things. I mean, this sort of idea that all of our politicians are bought and paid for and that you can't win the election without the backing of the Koch brothers or whatever, you know, has proved to be wrong. Now, as I say, it's not that this was a sort of, you know, popular uprising. Obama raised more money than Romney in the end. He raised a lot of money from big industries. He raised a lot of money from Hollywood. He actually raised quite a lot of money from Wall Street as well in the end. But he also raised a lot, you know, far more small contributions than Romney did.
And we recently talked to the author of a book who points out that much of the Obama money was spent on a modern equivalent of grassroots organizing rather than on TV ads. Citizens United is mostly about TV ads. And when I asked about why we're seeing so many ads in places like Pennsylvania and Ohio, he said, well, they have all this money and they have to spend it.
Right. I mean, what are they going to do, send it back to the donors? I don't think so. I mean, I think there's a I take the point that Obama had this brilliant high-tech micro-targeting campaign, but let's not be, you know, let's not ignore the fact that the Romney campaign actually ended up running fewer ads across the country than Obama. Obama defeated he defeated Romney in the ground operation, but he also defeated him over the air, which I don't think most people thought was likely going in. And especially the one point I'd make, Democrats very cleverly went early. They started negative advertising against Romney in the swing states way back in April, May, June, when the Romney campaign wasn't ready to respond. That put Romney on the back foot, most of those ads about his taxes, about Bain Capital. They did swing the polls in Obama's direction at that time, and Romney never really recovered.
Former Bush spokeswoman, Nicole Wallace, said on ABC News last night that the Obama campaign deserved a lot of credit for taking their very solid ground game from 2008 and improving on it. Now, you mentioned earlier the market being down, largely because of the Eurozone's problems. The Eurozone didn't even come up much during this campaign, despite the fact that Barack Obama could have said one of the reasons our economy is suffering is because Europe is one of our biggest trading partners.
Right. I mean, that's one of the criticisms I and many other people have of Obama, that he didn't more aggressively defend his economic record. As you very rightly say, Europe has adopted austerity. The Republicans want to introduce austerity here, and the record from Europe shows it doesn't work. Obama could have made that argument, but very early on, I think, he and his colleagues in Chicago decided they weren't going to talk about the stimulus at all. I think if you go back over the entire year, the president didn't use the word stimulus once, even though relative to what's happened in Europe, it's been, you know, quite a big success, I think. So to that extent, you know, he hasn't really got a mandate for active Keynesian economics, whatever you want to call it, when he should have, because the policies which were adopted in this country have worked a lot better than the policies which were adopted in Europe.
My guest is John Cassidy of The New Yorker, and we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with John Cassidy of The New Yorker. As we mentioned earlier in their speeches last night, both candidates emphasized the need to come together to solve the nation's problems, despite the fact that it doesn't look like bipartisanship is really in the offing. Here's what Governor Romney said.
The nation, as you know, is at a critical point. At a time like this, we can't risk partisan bickering and political posturing. Our leaders have to reach across the aisle to do the people's work. And we citizens also have to rise to the occasion.
Now, they talked a lot about the fiscal cliff. That was one of the phrases of the Republican Party. It's coming up at the end of the year. Is that problem number one?
Well, I think it's problem number one in the sense that it's there immediately. Unless something is done between now and January 1st, there are going to be big spending cuts and a big tax increase. Given that the economy is not going very strongly, that, if nothing else happened, could, you know, produce another recession next year. I'm a bit more optimistic than most people on this. It seems to me that both parties have got an incentive to reach some sort of a compromise. I don't think it will be necessarily a compromise which solves all the long-term economic problems of the country, but never underestimate the capacity of Washington to kick things down the road. I think, you know, they could come up with some sort of compromise which preserves some of the tax cuts for people under $250,000 and gets rid of some of the rest of them.
Well, now that some of the more ideological members of the House have been replaced, do you think that will be easier? We have the Democrat Patrick Murphy leading Alan West, a Tea Party favorite, in a race that still remains too close to call. But a number of other Tea Party people lost. On the other hand, on CNN, one of the pundits pointed out that President Obama made exactly one robocall for a House seat, and whereas Governor Romney did many. And it doesn't take all that long, she pointed out, to do to record a robocall. Right. She felt that he really hurt his chances to have the party take over the House again.
Yeah, I mean, they took a very cynical decision in the White House, I think, not to get involved in the congressional races. I mean, Obama also raised very little money for the Senate and House candidates.
Do you think that could backfire for him?
I think, well, it has backfired to the extent that any chance of the Democrats winning the House has obviously disappeared. The Republicans are still going to control the House. As I said earlier, you know, you can interpret the election as a repudiation of the sort of right-wing Tea Party, social conservative division of the Republican Party. But if you just look at the House Republicans, there's still a large phalanx of conservative members there. It's still going to be dominated by the conservative caucus. So I don't think there's going to be any great change in the immediate future in how they behave.
One of the things that the president's reelection guarantees is that the Affordable Care Act will be implemented. Is that a key to victory for the president and the Democrats because the Republicans made that such a cornerstone of their campaign?
Well, to the extent that Obama won, despite the fact that Obamacare is still unpopular according to the polls, I guess you could interpret it as a victory. Again, it was another one of those issues which the president and his colleagues didn't really want to talk about. They did defend it when pushed, but it certainly wasn't central to their campaign. But as you say, you know, now that the Supreme Court's approved it, or large parts of it, and now that we've had the election, Obamacare in all its enormity and in all its detailed stipulations is going to be introduced in the next few years, and it's going to be fascinating to see how it turns out.
Well, one of the ways the Republicans hoped to go after Obamacare was by making Paul Ryan the vice presidential candidate. He was not the game changer they hoped he would be.
No, I mean, I think in retrospect, the choice of Ryan was a big mistake. Romney defended it last night, saying that apart from his wife, choosing Ryan was the best choice he's ever made. I'm not sure that was a great testimony to his wife, because you can make the argument that Ryan may have helped them lose in Florida, for example. The problem with bringing Ryan on the ticket was it brought Medicare, Medicaid, and Ryan cuts back onto the front pages, which Romney had been running away from. And in a very narrow election like this, that's exactly what the Democrats wanted. So I think that in retrospect, that was a mistake. It's hard to see why Obama actually chose him. I think he just needed a boost from the right going into the convention, and it looks like it was a sort of short-term decision, and they decided, well, we'll figure out the consequences after the convention.
Now, Ryan has also been one of the hardliners on abortion rights, and most of the people who made a point of opposing abortion, with one exception, a doctor who seems to have had a tendency to sleep with his patients, all the others lost their races. People in Planned Parenthood are claiming that it's kind of a victory for them.
Well, it is a big victory for them. I mean, the politics on this are not very complicated. I mean, we've known for 20, 25 years, and more than that, that Roe versus Wade is popular. If you put it on the ballot, it almost always wins, apart from in, you know, sort of socially conservative areas. Certainly in a national ballot, it would go through. It's politically poison for the Republicans, but it's one of these cases where the base just won't accept any other stance on the issue. And of course, Romney used to be, you know, in favor of abortion when he was running Massachusetts, and he was steadily dragged to the right over the last few years. He moved a bit to the right in 2008. That wasn't enough for 2012, so he moved further to the right then, tried to back away from it a bit in the last few weeks. But sure, this was another repudiation of the Republican stance on Roe versus Wade.
And then there's gay marriage. Gay marriage ballot initiatives were approved in both Maryland and Maine. And Maine is a state that elected a Tea Party governor in 2010. So how significant is that in terms of reading the tone of the electorate?
I think it's important also, you know, the marijuana initiative passing in Colorado. It suggests that America is a more liberal country than is often portrayed. As I said earlier, the Democrats have won 5 out of 6 elections now. The right wing of the Republican Party has been repudiated, and we've got these changing social issues. Gay marriage, even 10 years ago, was so toxic. Sorry, even 4 years ago, was so toxic. It was thought that Obama wouldn't really touch it. A lot of gay activists were outraged that he didn't do anything about it in the first part of his administration. Now it seems, following Governor Cuomo's lead, actually, you know, not everybody agrees with it, but a majority of the population agree with it. And I think it's a sign of how America's changing, you know, but it's becoming a more liberal, secular society.
And the president also referred to climate change in his speech last night, something that he's been dragged into kind of reluctantly.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see what he can do on that. It's going to be hard to do anything without some congressional approval, but at least he could make some more speeches about it, try and take an international initiative.
There's the bully pulpit, isn't there?
Or exactly.
And people have complained that he hasn't used the bully pulpit as much as he might have been able to.
That's certainly true. I mean, it's one of the big complaints about his first term. Maybe climate change is the issue he's going to seize upon in his second term to try and sort of fashion some sort of legacy for himself. After Hurricane Sandy, we've got the mayor coming out saying climate change is a big, you know, is a sort of definitive issue for our times. Al Gore's back in the public eye. It'll be interesting to see how far Obama does push on that. It's hard to see him getting anything through Congress, but as you say, he could be out there talking about it a lot more.
My guest is John Cassidy of The New Yorker. We're talking about the election, in case you haven't heard enough about the election, but we hope that our analysis might clear up a few things. The president did very well with secular voters, won 2/3 of secular voters. This is another area where the country seems to be polarized, and it affects so many other issues. Mitt Romney did incredibly well with churchgoers, for example.
Right. I mean, it's another – the Obama coalition seems to be barely a majority now. I mean, and part of that coalition is the people who are not extremely religious or are in fact secular, which is a – quite rapidly growing segment of the population. I think it's not commonly talked about because the people who identify as religious are still in the majority, but the minority is growing bigger year by year. It's another, again, I hate to repeat myself, but it's another sign, you know, that America is changing, and it's changing in the direction of the Obama coalition rather than in the direction of the Republican coalition.
And another thing that seemed to have helped Democratic candidates was the increasing diversity across the country, which was something Republicans were obviously aware of, if the lineup of speakers at the Republican National Convention was any indication. Will the Republican Party have to figure out how to appeal to a broader swath of the electorate in the coming years, especially Latino voters?
Yeah, I mean, of course they will. I mean, they all know that. I mean, that's the amazing thing about the Republicans. If you talk to them privately, they all realize this is a sort of kamikaze strategy of just relying on the aging white men vote. You know, if you go back to 2000, George W. Bush and Karl Rove, they made a big outreach to the Hispanics. I mean, you know, some people say it was a fraud, but they did try it. They, you know, they adopted the language of compassionate conservatism. They talked about a route to citizenship for immigrants, illegal immigrants who'd been here a long time. And they were looking at the experience in Texas, where there's obviously, you know, a large and growing Latino population, which within 10, 20 years is going to turn Texas into another swing state. Lindsey Graham, the Republican senator, said even before the election that the big message of this loss, if it is a loss, is that we can't ignore demographics and we can't ignore the Hispanic vote. So they know the problem. They know what needs to be done. The question is whether they can wrest the party away from the sort of nativist white majority, which dominates the party in so much of the Midwest and the South.
The people who analyze votes, the one who's gotten the most attention recently is Nate Silver, who contributes to the 538 column in the New York Times. They seem to suggest that the result was preordained, but it didn't feel that way for the rest of us. Was it, or was there a turning point during the campaign?
Well, I actually criticized Nate Silver a bit in a blog post I wrote a few weeks ago saying that you can't necessarily predict elections, but it turns out he did predict this one, so my hat's off to Nate. He was about the only forecaster who said that Obama would win Florida. I mean, he had it only very narrowly, but he did get that. There is some predictability in elections. If you, in the opinion polls generally are reliable. Doesn't mean they're always going to be reliable. That's why I object to the sort of rigid analysis of forecasting. We've only had, you know, the polling data only really goes back well till 1976, so it's a small sample. But based on the sample we have, if you're ahead in the polls by 2 or 3 points in September, you always win the election. We've never seen a big turnaround. That doesn't mean it never can happen. And it looked after the first debate that Romney, you know, had a real chance of victory. And I think if he'd have given a better performance in the second debate and the third debate, he could have possibly squeezed out a victory.
Now, was it a bad performance by Romney or a better performance by Obama?
Well, it was a bit of both, I think. I mean, Obama gave such a terrible performance in the first debate that I think it was the first time in his presidency that he's received such criticism from the left and the liberals that it sort of shocked him into being much more aggressive in the second debate. Romney didn't give bad performance in the second debate, I don't think, but he wasn't as aggressive. And then in the third debate, I think that one turned out to be pretty decisive. And the other big factor, I think, which helped Obama was, of course, Hurricane Sandy and the big endorsement from Chris Christie. I think actually that may be what has swung Florida even, because Florida's a big hurricane state. I think, you know, if you're watching Obama handling the hurricane well and you're in Florida, you think better of him.
And so if you are an undecided voter and you learned that Governor Romney said he wanted to do away with FEMA because it was immoral, that might have actually
Way. Just on the polling data, you know, there was definitely a last-minute swing in this election, but it was a last-minute swing to Obama. You can see that in the Gallup poll, which was suspended during Hurricane Sandy. The last day it suspended, was the last day it came out before the storm, Obama was up by 5 points. It didn't come out for another week because of the problems gathering data. When it came back, Obama's lead was down to 1 point. So I think Hurricane Sandy did play a significant role in this, and Obama's, you know, adroit handling of it.
One of President Obama's first calls last night after speaking with Governor Romney was to Bill Clinton. How important was the former president's work from the convention on?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, second to Chris Christie, but, you know, important, I think. I mean, as I said earlier, I think Bill Clinton's a much better explainer of especially of economics than Obama is, who I always think is a bit uncomfortable talking about economics. And he gave the sort of revisionist history of Obamanomics, saying that actually it worked, the Republicans were obstructionists all along, and that history will look at the Democratic record or Obama's record a lot more strongly than most of the contemporaries. I think that's all right. And the other thing that Clinton's speech did, which is important, is it gave a massive boost to the activists and the Democratic base, who were getting a bit worried at the time. I mean, it really turned around the convention.
Listening to the president's victory speech last night was a blend of the optimism of candidate Obama in 2008 and the pragmatism of President Obama in 2012. Let's take a listen.
Because we are not as divided as our politics suggests. We're not as cynical as the pundits believe. We are greater than the sum of our individual ambitions, and we remain more than a collection of red states and blue states. We are, and forever will be, the United States of America.
That sounded a lot more energetic than candidate Obama. Part of that speech almost sounded like his 2004 convention keynote speech. Did you pick up an element of nostalgia as the president gave this final
speech? Yeah, there was
speech?
A bit of that. I mean, you mentioned the 2004 convention speech, also the 2008 2008 speech in Denver as well. This sort of post-partisanship, we're all Americans, we're not just Democrats or Republicans. I think he and his speech actually sort of reach back into history, and he even brought up the Hope Line, if you remember, you know, defending the sort of campaign poster from 2008. This was certainly a much, as you said, much more energized Obama. I mean, I kept wondering as I was watching it, where was this guy in the first debate, and where was he even in Charlotte, where he gave a very downbeat and pretty lackluster speech.
So what's left for the people who predicted that Romney was going to win big? People like Karl Rove, of course, who had spent so much money, actually, to try to defeat Barack Obama. But somebody like Newt Gingrich, who said, he's going to win. Trust me, I've been in this business a long time.
Right.
Of course, he had also predicted that he was going to win the Republican nomination earlier. But do they all just go back to the drawing board, or do they just go back to their rooms with their tails between their legs and then come back with the same arguments they had before?
Well, we would hope they'd show some humility, but on the basis of history, I don't see any point of it, any chance of that. I mean, I think, you've got to understand, these guys are basically in business. Politics is a business to them. There's an alternative Republican universe out there, Fox News, the Republican think tanks, the Republican donors. If you're Karl Rove or you're Newt Gingrich, especially the Gingrich in particular, you can go back to these people and say, look, the problem was we didn't have the right candidate. Romney wasn't a good exponent of conservatism. There wasn't a strong enough contrast between us and the Democrats. I think that's all crazy. But I don't think, you can't expect turkeys to vote for Christmas. So I don't think these guys are going to suddenly turn around and say, look, Nelson Rockefeller was right all along. George H.W. Bush was right all along. We should be a more inclusive, tolerant party. It's going to take somebody from the outside or from within the party who isn't part of the establishment to lead a counter-revolution. I mean, the Republicans basically need a Tony Blair or a Bill Clinton to refashion the party.
So it's being predicted now that the two most likely Republican candidates will be Chris Christie or Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan, who remains in the political spotlight because he was reelected in Wisconsin. Do you see either of them?
I'm sure both of them will run. I mean, Jeb Bush is the other big name. I mean, if you're looking for a the problem is he's got the Bush name attached to him, of course.
But his main campaign message is, don't blame my brother for everything.
But people have forgotten, we've finally had an election without the Bushes. Maybe people will be willing to take another Bush in 2016. I mean, Jeb Bush's great advantage is that he is talking about outreach to Hispanics and other minorities. And he gave a speech, even during the campaign, which was pretty brave for a Republican, criticizing the Republican stance on these things. Chris Christie, who knows what's going to happen to him? He's like a shooting star. He could easily end up president, but he could also, blow up at some point, I would have thought. I mean, wouldn't it have been fascinating if Chris Christie had been the vice presidential candidate now, or even the presidential candidate? We might be talking about, a different result.
Well, they told him that he was their first choice, but then they decided to go with Ryan.
Right, he was their first choice until they made their choice, and then he was their second choice.
John Cassidy is contributor to The New Yorker. What is your official title there?
We don't really have official titles at The New Yorker. I guess I'm a staff writer and blogger.
Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you.